Hello everybody, you're listening to The Archer on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. I'm your host, Dane Cobain. This is the weekly radio show where we chat about the local arts news, we have a different guest on each week, we head over to the Rhyolite Zone for a short story and or some poetry, and we catch up with Twangling Jack Ford in the Ilk Shed for a weekly album review. As always, you can find us on Facebook. If you search for The Art Show on Wickham Sound, you should be able to find us. And you can email me here at the studio on dane.cobain@wickhamsound.org.uk. That's dane.cobain@wickhamsound.org.uk. I particularly want to hear from poets, performers, musicians, anyone with a story to share, news to share, MP3s we can play. Get in touch. We're also repeated here on Wickham Sound on Monday nights, and you can catch us again on the Wickham Sound Listen Again on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. So this week we are going to be chatting to comedy musician Tom Veck, but before we get to that, we're going to head over to the Rhyolite Zone, and this is fantasy author J.V. Hilliard with a reading from one of his Warminster novels.
Yeah, from chapter 2. A hunter who knows how to hunt without his falcon. Faxarian proverb. Sir Ritter Vulcaneer was daydreaming of a new pair of boots. He'd torn a hole in the sole of his current pair after deftly escaping the snare trap set by the Trollborn tribes that hunted close to his ancestral home at this time of year. They'd been hoping for small game, but instead he'd left them with shoe leather. He was on the hunt with his long marchers, a team of rangers and scouts moving noiselessly from tree to tree deep within the forest of Ravenwood. The Long Marchers had been given their moniker by Ritter's father, Lord Herzog Vulcaneer, because he felt it perfectly befitted the scouting element of his small retinue of rangers. They operated outside of typical military protocols and spent extended periods of time in the field. Ritter leaned against a tree and followed his mind to Storm, his war falcon, surveying the forest from high above. He saw through Storm's eyes, heard through his ears, and could command the bird to watch fly or attack with a quick thought. It was an affinity to animals they inherited from his mother, a raven elf and sorceress. It would shorten the hunt, but Ritter enjoyed the simplicity of the link. There were no politics, no hidden meanings, but a shared existence impossible to describe to those who didn't possess the same ability. Juxtaposing the falcon's vision with his own, Ritter watched a stag bounding in from the south. The stag, unaware of Storm and Ritter, was climbing a mossy rock formation below the hunter. It was soon within range. Ritter slowly and quietly adjusted his body against the tree, relaxing his bowstring and moving his longbow from one side of the trunk to the other, anticipating the coming shot. He took a deep, long breath to calm the excitement before the kill. The stag bent to drink at the stream not 50 yards away from him, then raised its neck as though it had been alerted somehow to his presence. It paused for a moment, then leapt forward in an unpredictable burst, fleeing the stream in a blind sprint. Ritter felt the tension rise as adrenaline surged through his veins. His heartbeat echoed in time with the stag's own hurried pace. With his bowstring drawn back and begging to be loose, let loose, it was time for the shot. He turned to his right, where his lieutenant, Wilcox de la Croix, stood below him, his longbow also drawn. Ritter knew he had the superior shot lined up while Wilcox was still knocking an arrow to his string. He smiled to himself, tweaked his aim to the left, and let his arrow fly, whistling within a foot or so of the stag. The stag turned and raced through the underbrush toward Delacroix, whose arrow was finally knocked and who released the string just in time. The arrow flew true and hit its target, downing the stag on impact. Ritter turned to face his friend from the perch in the tree and said, "Good shot, Delacroix. It's about time you feathered us a nice meal." "Ha," Delacroix boasted, beaming with pride. "The famous bullseye bowman of the bridge, beaten again. If you keep this up, someone will have to take your title at the next Cross Arrows tournament." "Perhaps," Ritter replied, smiling enigmatically, "but 50 silver laurels say it won't be you." By now, more of the Long Marchers had arrived and progressed through the forest as silent as a squirrel. Ritter turned to look at them and pointed at the downed animal. "Someone cut his throat and truss him up," he said. "We dine well tonight." When darkness fell, Ritter ordered his men to set camp on the outskirts of the forest. His long marchers dug a fire pit and created a rudimentary spit using a spear and a couple of downed trees. Delacroix's kill was skinned, prepared, and impaled on the spear, and once the meat was cooked and the camp had been struck, the men set about it with their knives until nothing remained but bone. Unless they had time to forage, long marchers ate what they brought with them, but today was different. They were close enough to the town of Vulcaneer to lower their guard and enjoy a hunt. Roasting wild game on an open pit would bring unwanted trouble in the far fields, but the Long Marchers felt free of the dangers of the Dragon's Breath Mountains. So, no trace of the bandits, Mar Larkin said. A raven elf from a nearby forest, though still subject to the crown, Mar sat amongst the huddled group. A fortnight searching for them and nary a hoofprint. If the rumors are true, Delacroix replied, and Veldrin Nightcloak has come to Ravenwood, we'll find him. The Long Marchers were used to tracking the Trollborn tribes of the north, and on rare occasion, the cryptid creatures of the nearby wilds. Cryptids were the not-so-mythical beasts that plagued their borders every now and then. Confident are you, Tilleron, the group's official bard, said subconsciously, strumming the notes of his newest song of his on his lute. Shall I start composing the ballad of Wilcox Delacroix? The Long Marchers chuckled at the lieutenant's expense, and even Delacroix found humor at the jab as he took a swig of his ale. If the cloak was truly the one who pillaged these villages in Queen's Chapel, he shouldn't be hard to find, Rufus Cragg offered while taking a drag of his pipe. You can't hide the trail of 100 horses in the woods so easily. Cragg, like Ritter, was trollborn. While Ritter was trollborn of a human father and an elven mother, Cragg was born part human and part Holdrafolk on his mother's side. The Holdrafolk were half the size of humans, and depending on their lineage, they made quick and vicious warriors. Cragg's human blood made him taller and even stronger than the average Holdra, to the benefit of the Long Marchers. Are the Raven Elves searching too, Sir Ritter? Mar asked. Aye, Ritter replied, after taking a bite of his venison. My mother assured me that she sent word to the Coronel. Then you doubt the reports from Queen's Chapel, sir, Delacroix asked. Someone raided those towns, Ritter stood and spat into the fire pit. But if the rumors are true and the cloak vanished into the dragon breasts as if he'd never been there. Horses and carts laden with treasure always leave tracks, Delacroix observed. Yet we found none, Ritter said starkly. Our adversaries, whoever they may be, are skillful. Then let's drink to the latter lass among us who finds a hint of their path, Mar pledged, raising his tankard high. To the bastard's trail. The trail, the group toasted. They sat up and drinking for the rest of the night, picking at the remainder of the bones clean and going about their business in the bushes. That there was safety in numbers and the troops knew they were close to home, so camp had a relaxed atmosphere. Ritter, ever careful, doubled the night watch anyway. They slept in their armor and kept their weapons close at hand.
That was J.V. Hilliard reading from The Last Keeper. You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. I'm your host, Dane Cobain, and this is Lucky Me by the Rockola Morning Band.
We've been through this before. What does it take to get through to you? A perfect date, but somehow I knew that you do that thing you do. Why do you disrespect me when you know how much it upsets me? You've just ruined the perfect night out again. If you want pudding, order a pudding. If you say you're fine, then don't eat mine. 'Cause when you ask the waiter for another spoon, but you hadn't asked me if you could ask for another spoon. Oh, I wanted the earth to swallow you.
I specifically chose this exact combination of dishes because I knew it would fill me up. If she has some of my pudding, it's not going to be enough.
The sticky toffee pudding arrived on a tiny plate. Oblivious, you look up and smile as if everything's just great. Greedily gulping way more than a polite helping. You've just ripped my heart from my chest again. If you want pudding, order a pudding. If you say you're fine, then don't eat mine. What am I supposed to do? 'Cause if I tell you how I feel, it's gonna turn into a massive deal. And you're just gonna think I'm a loser, when really it's you who's the abuser. When you took that little bit off the top, the little crispy chewy toffee thing, I really, really love the chewy toffee thing. Pretty sure you know I love the toffee bit, but you took it anyway. I didn't know what to say. I can't see another way. It's gonna have to be our last day. If you want pudding, order a pudding. If you say you're fine, then don't eat mine. If you want pudding, order a pudding. If you say you're fine, then don't eat mine. Order your own.
That was some music by Tom Veck, and before that we had Lucky Me by the Rockola Morning Band. You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. I'm your host, Dane Cobain, and we're here in conversation with the man himself, Tom Veck. Over to Tom. So the first question, which is one I ask everybody, may or may not be relevant to you, but it's, what was the last book that you read, and what did you think of it?
Last book I read was The Wheel of Time.
Right, okay.
Book one in the series. I love fantasy. I love it when people create whole new worlds and whole new kind of civilizations and all the rest of it. And my favorite book is called The Name of the Wind.
Yeah.
And it's a fantasy book and it's absolutely mind blowing. So I thought, oh, let's give this a try. There's 14 of the beggars.
Yeah.
So I'm in book one was great. I'm in book two now. And, you know, it's still good, but, I don't know. The characters aren't quite as convincing as I was hoping, and yeah, it hasn't quite got the edge I would have liked. But
yeah.
It definitely took me away. It definitely escaped me from reality. So
awesome. Well, they made a TV show of that recently as well, haven't they? And I'm pretty sure. So it was Robert Jordan who wrote it, wasn't it? And I'm pretty sure he died before he finished it, and then I think Brandon Sanderson finished off the last four or five books or whatever in the series.
Which apparently were amazing.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well. But it's one of those series where I'm scared to start reading it because I know 14 books is going to take me a while, you know?
Yeah, I was kind of the same. But then I thought, actually, it means that I don't have to make the decision about what to read. It's just next.
Yeah. Awesome. So one of the main things I want to talk to you about today is your music. Can you sort of do music / comedy? I wondered where you got your start with that.
Well, I mean, I've been on stage since I was about 13. I joined a band when I was at school. I started a band when I was at secondary school. And we started, you know, gigging at about age 15, 16, filling up pubs with underage drinkers and just having a great old time. And I was on the drums in that band, and I loved all of our music. But as we got older, I started realizing that the songs didn't really mean anything. They, you know, the lyrics were kind of incredibly poetic and beautifully kind of sung, but there was no sort of deeper meaning. And then I wrote my first comedy song. I didn't know how to play guitar, but I put my fingers in some different shapes until I found something that worked. And I wrote a song called Black Chicken. So it's a bit like being the black sheep of the flock. It was about a black chicken who was ostracized because she ate nuts and bolts and spiky bark instead of grain. And she wanted to be like nocturnal. And it was all about that. And anyway, it was a real hit. People just absolutely loved it. Whenever I played it, people just wanted to hear it again and again. And that kind of gave me the inspiration to do more. And yeah, just over the years, I've just found that somehow comedy songs just sort of pop out of me. It's kind of, it's a strange thing. They just kind of happen. And since that time, I've, you know, actually learned how to play the guitar, and I've actually learned how to sing. And yeah, now I'm out there getting the songs out there and absolutely loving it.
Yeah. Cool. So when you write a song, I'm guessing, does it begin with the lyrics or with the concept for you, or do you play a few chords and do it that way around?
It begins with the concept. So I've just been in Australia for a month, actually, visiting our my wife's family. And I wrote a song out there. Immediately, the first thing was like, I need to write a song about that time I got attacked by a ferret. And so that was it. There was the concept there. It was, okay, this is good. This is funny. This is silly. And then the lyrics started coming in and the melody comes in. And then I've often almost finished writing the song in my head before I pick up a guitar. And I mean, my mobile phone is so helpful. I use the voice recorder and I'll just start singing bits in there and then pause it and think, oh, and then the next bit. And, you know, and then by the end of it, you know, it all kind of joins up together. And then I get the guitar and I try and work out how the hell I'm going to, you know, try and accompany this thing.
Yeah. Cool. So in terms of one of the questions I've asked a lot of musicians recently is about COVID and how that's affected them. Has that affected your creativity at all? Or, I mean, I suppose it's a bit different because I've asked people like bands, for example, where for them it's meant they haven't been able to practice. But if it's just sort of yourself and a guitar, maybe less. So what would you say?
Well, it was interesting. I do a lot of my singing in the car. So I various different jobs that I do mean I need to drive here and there. I do a lot of my vocal warm-ups, my vocal practices, which are really annoying to hear. You know, you don't want to hear like 20 minutes of rah, 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 you know. So I do a lot of that in the car. And then I do a lot of my singing in the car. And in fact, I wrote probably about a third of my first album in the car on the way to work. I was a primary teacher at the time, and I would just be recording it as I went. So actually what I found was I didn't really want to be singing and creating in a house full of people with my family around. So it did impact, and I didn't play very much at all. I didn't rehearse and I didn't write much music over that whole time. And then as soon as lockdown eased and I was able to be back out and on my own again, it was much better. And then amazingly, my neighbor built a soundproof recording studio about 30 seconds walk from my back gate and gave me a key. So I'm like, okay, great. So now, you know, whatever happens, I've got this space that I can use, which is a real joy.
Awesome. And you mentioned albums there. So how many albums do you have out, and do you have a favorite out of them?
I've just got two albums at the moment. They're very different. The first album was like, oh, I've got so much material that I just need to do something with it. It was before I was really in the mindset of performing and doing gigs as a solo artist. I've got other projects I play live with. But so it's a mixture of comedy, strange science fiction, sort of heart songs, ballads. It's all sorts. And that's on Spotify, that one. It's called The Invention. And I love that album. It's, you know, sort of 15 years of songwriting, the best ones just put down, and a few that just popped out while I was making the album. And this latest one called Real Life, which you can get on Bandcamp, it's a pure comedy album. And yeah, I'm really happy with it. It's quite different to the other one, that it's all the same kind of tone. So it's me with the guitar, and then we've got a bit of bass, and then it's all just me, my backing vocals, my harmonies, and me playing all the other instruments. The other album was all my friends playing different instruments, here and there. So they're very different. But yeah, at the moment, I'd have to say that my latest album, Real Life, is where I'm at, because I'm just really proud of it. It took a long time to record, and yeah, it's feeling good. And it's what I play live as well. It's kind of what you'll experience if you come to a show. So
cool. And you mentioned that some of your songs are based on science fiction. Could you go into a bit more depth there? Like, is it based on existing sci-fi stories, or do you kind of create your own stories? What does that look like?
Yeah, so on the first album, I've got a song about cloning, human cloning, and it was just sort of like an exploration into, it's called, I mean, I guess the main line in the chorus is, just because you can, it doesn't mean you should. Just because you can change the world doesn't mean that it's for good. And it's all about kind of, I just get so frustrated and upset when I think about what's probably going on in some strange secret lab in Korea somewhere, or whatever, when, you know, all these kind of experiments, and that there's such a lack of kind of heart and humanity in I think a lot of people's scientific ventures. So that's kind of one of them. Another one is more of a comedy one about, I was filling in my driving license form, and I got to the bit which said, you know, will you give your body for science or whatever? I said, yeah, of course I will, absolutely, definitely. And I sort of was about to tick the box, and I thought, oh, but what about my brain? Like, what if they do something with my brain? What if I wake up in a canopic jar with, like, you know, wires on me and used for experiment? And I was kind of half joking, but half like just fascinated by this idea that by the time I die, who knows which government's going to be in power and what they'll do with my body and my body parts. And I could be reanimated, you know, what it, anyway. So I wrote a kind of comedy song exploring like what could happen if someone took my brain out and, you know, reanimated me on another planet to repopulate the human race or whatever. So yeah, it's just kind of, you know, I love science fiction, and it's fun to kind of explore it in a comedic way here and there. So.
Ooh. Awesome. You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. I'm your host, Dane Cobain. I'm here in conversation with Tom Veck, and this is some more of Tom's music.
Yeah! room, tidy room. Can't see the floor, can't see the floor, can't see the floor, can't see the floor. Can't open the door, can't open the door, can't open the door, can't open the door. Can't take any more, can't take any more, can't take any more. I'm walking on Lego. Ow! I'm picking up Lego. No! I'm playing with Lego. Whoa! And it's actually quite fun! Oh yeah, what did it take me so long? Gonna go and buy some more. Oh yeah, who gives a damn about the floor? Look, I tipped it all on the floor, Daddy.
Yep, yep, okay, yeah, I see that. Thanks very much. Brilliant.
That was some music by Tom Veck. You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. I'm your host, Dane Cobain, and I'm here in conversation with Tom. So over to Tom Veck.
And I think I came across you through the open mics lately, right? How useful has that been to you, and why would you recommend people join it?
Yeah. Tell me how you pronounce it, because I've never known. What is it?
Well, I say open mics are late, but other people say mixolate, so...
What does it mean?
Well, it's open mic crossed with self-isolation originally.
Because it was
originally set up during the very first lockdown, I think. So the idea was having like an online open mic that, you know, people could go to because all of the, you know, all of the actual open mics were closed down.
Brilliant. Yeah, I still haven't figured out what the name was. Yeah, I just came across, I can't remember how I came across that, but it is really helpful. And it depends. Like, so I'm in another band, a rock band for kids, and we go into schools and we make music videos with kids and, you know, try and get them into music and get them being creative and everything. And the guy that I work with doing that, the other guy in the band, he can practice and practice and practice and practice every day just for the joy of practicing, just for the buzz of getting better at something. I just can't do that. And I think a lot of other people can't. So what I need is a goal. I need a reason. And something like the open micolate is a goal. You know, you can say to yourself, right, I'm going to practice this song again and again and again until it's good enough for me to record. And then I'm going to share it on this space. And it gives you a goal. But also singing and performing puts you in a very, very vulnerable space. And it's very scary. Something about the voice. When you hear someone sing, you can kind of unconsciously sort of tell how they're feeling as well. So you're kind of, because you can't hide it in your voice, so you're sort of sharing your feelings. Anyway, it's a very vulnerable thing to do. So that page, that open micolate page, is an opportunity just to feel into that vulnerability and just to have a go and just to sort of, just overcome that fear and anxiety and just do it. And it's such a supportive space. I don't think I've ever seen anybody, you know, flagging anyone off or being kind of mean on there. So yeah, I think it's really helpful for musicians.
Awesome. Cool. So a couple of I guess more general questions really. I wanted to ask you why you think music and comedy go so well together.
Yeah, I mean, for me, a lot of my comedy music is kind of based on real life events that have happened to me. And so, like, for example, the ferret one about when I was attacked by a ferret. And when I'm playing it, it's like I can tell that story and I can get really into it and I can act it out with my hands and I can, you know, show people the ferret hanging off my eyebrow and scratching my face with blood pouring down me and all my friends sitting around kind of freaking out. But when you sing it, the addition of the chords and the tempo and the changing of everything, it brings in like a whole emotional element so that people can kind of feel it even more. So that's one thing. It's like whenever I'm coming up with a chorus to a song, I'm like, no, that needs to be a bit more minor there and a bit sadder to go with what I'm saying. And so it really is kind of bringing in this sort of very visceral feeling of the emotion of what's being said. So that's one part of it. And another thing is, I don't know, there's something about the song, the form of a song, in that I often, a lot of my songs have a reveal. So there's like an intro. I've got a song about being addicted to crisps, and I tease people for quite a while about talking about this awful, you know, thing that I want to confess that I feel so ashamed of, and I just can't stop it. And in people's minds, it's like, oh my God, what is he talking about? And then I hit them with, you know, that I'm a crispaholic, and you know, that's kind of the comedy. And so you've got all these different sections in the song. You've got the build up, and then you've got the verse, and then you've got this blasting chorus, and you can just really play around with all those things. And yeah, I don't know. I just think it works really well. It's, you know, it's a very exciting creative process.
Cool. Awesome. And what would you say is the best medicine? So people say laughter is the best medicine. Laughter or music, which is the best medicine?
Well, yeah, probably both. Laughter and music. And swimming in rivers and hugging and people.
And actual medicine.
And actual medicine, yeah.
Cool. So one of the things, this kind of goes back to some of your sci-fi concepts, and you're free to use this for a song if you'd like, but if you had a time machine and you could go back in time to when you were first starting out, maybe when you were first writing that first comedy song, what message would you give yourself?
Right, so what, when I was back in the day, yeah, I would say, I mean, I guess if I was going back to when I was first going to perform on stage, I would say, look out there, look at those people. They're all awesome. They're brilliant. They've all got their struggles. They've all got their things they bring to the world. They're amazing. And they've come here and, you know, they want to support you. And go out there, not to show them how good you are. Go out there and give them some music as a way of saying thank you for being so awesome. Because at the time when I was much, much younger, I was just desperately trying to prove that I was worthy of whatever love or support or people's time. And it makes you so nervous, you know, your whole life is on the line. Whereas now I go out there and I'm like, oh, I've got something to give you lot, and you're going to really enjoy it, and let's have fun together. And that is so much easier. It's so much less stressful. And it's kind of like, you know, you don't necessarily care so much if you mess it up or if things go wrong, because it's just, this is a gift, you know. Yeah. You can't scoff at a gift. It's like, oh, actually, I don't quite like the cover of this book. Can you take it back? You know, it's like, no, this is for you.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah, that's probably the advice I'd give.
Awesome. So you mentioned as well that in one of your emails to me, I think that you've been on a few other radio shows recently. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah. What about the shows, or about how the interviews went, or
a bit of both? Yeah. What did you talk about?
I went on, I think it was Radio Somerset, and that was fun, with Sally. Yeah, with Sally, and it was brilliant. Anyway, somehow she got me talking about the time that I was a life model for one day. And I don't know why we started talking about that. But anyway, she found it so funny that I ended up going away and writing a song about that time that I was a life model. And so now I've got this new song in my set, which was great. Yeah, and what else did I go on? Oh, another sort of shorter show. I've been quite enjoying doing a bit of, you know, radio interviews. It's nice to talk about yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
And kind of just, it makes you think more clearly about what it is you do and why you do it. And yeah, I find it really, really helpful.
Yeah, well, and you got a song out of that one as well, so that's pretty cool as well.
Got a song out of it, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. So it's two questions really to end on. But first of all, what's next for you? And second, where can people follow you to stay up to date?
Yeah, great. So what's next? I've got a gig in Boscombe near Bournemouth with Kitty Stewart, who's an amazing singer and musician. She plays the ukulele, and she's got some really nice, upbeat, jolly, kind of funny songs. And we're playing in the Cherry Theatre. So that's great for me. It's like getting a bit further away from home and doing stuff. I've also been booked to do a gig at the Hay Festival later in the year. So yeah, the next gig is on April Fool's Day, April the 1st in Boscombe at the Cherry Theatre. I'm really excited about that. I've been told that Boscombe is full of weirdos and eccentric, cool, interesting people. So I'm going to really bring out some of my weirder songs for that. And yeah, in terms of staying in touch with me, at the moment, the best way is on Facebook, Tom Veck Live. That's V-E-C-K, Tom Veck Live. And I've also recently started shooting my own music videos. And I've got a couple of those on YouTube. It's quite hard to find me on YouTube because there's another guy called Tom Veck, V-E-K.
Right.
Anyway, I think if you put in, for example, what's the name of one of the songs? If you were to type in Tom Veck The Machines, that's one of my videos.
Yeah,
I'm really enjoying that. So I did a degree in media production and I'm finally using it now, sort of 20 years later. But yeah, so I'm going to be continuing to make more and more music videos of my songs. Yeah, awesome. So Facebook, Tom Veck Live, and YouTube.
Big thank you to Tom Veck for joining me. You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. I'm your host, Dane Cavane, and this is another one of Tom's tunes.
I am a child of the 80s, and I'm scarred by what I've seen. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, with the wrong movies on the screen. I saw a Nazi's face get melted off, dribbling everywhere. The monkey brains and the eyeball soup and the bugs, it was just too much. And that screaming handcuffed mutant headed guy in the Goonies, I saw him in my nightmares for a month. I was terrified and I couldn't get to sleep at night in case Freddy Krueger snuck into my dreams with his manky face and his knifey hands. And I am a child of the 80s, and I'm scarred by what I've seen. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, with the wrong movies on the screen. I couldn't go to the circus because of the clowns, frickin' Pennywise. I can see that blood balloon bursting in the sink when I close my eyes. If I ever dropped my car keys into a tree trunk with a hole in it, you can bet your ass I'd never reach inside like Flash Gordon did. I was completely inconsolable when E.T. went all white and nearly died. And then he abandoned me on a spaceship I could eat. I am a child of the 80s, and I'm scarred by what I've seen. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, with the wrong movies on the screen. And then my favorite horse, my bestest friend, was swallowed up by the swamps of sadness, yeah. Artax, you can make it. Artax, keep trying. Artax, you're sinking. Artax, you're dying. Artax, I love you. I need you to leave me. Artax! I see Chucky dolls, I see Hellraiser, the guy from the fly pulling bits of his face up. Snake surprise, gremlins and critters, a gun possessed by demon puking pile across the room. I see aliens bursting out of people's chests, someone getting covered in toxic waste in RoboCop. Help me! Is it ever going to stop? I am a child of the 80s, and I'm scarred by what I've seen. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, with the wrong movies on the screen.
straight into the rough. On the other side, people don't look up once they've caught his eye.
Was When the Devil Goes Down by Maz Manzini, and before that we had some music by Tom Veck. You're listening to The Art Show on 106.6 FM Wickham Sound. I'm your host Dane Cobain, and it's time for us to head over to the Oak Shed for this week's album review, courtesy of Twangle and Jack Ford.
Dresden Dolls, Yes Virginia. I had played in a band and written two musicals. One was workshopped at the Theatre Royal Stratford East, and the other was actually performed by two different companies. But it was when I saw the Dresden Dolls on Later with Jules Holland, I saw how I wanted my performing future to look like. I found and studied their website. I was knocked out by their song Girl Anachronism. I loved the whole punk cabaret thing they had going, with a very strong image. There was also a maddeningly catchy song called Coin Operated Boy. This was a big moment for me because I had video material to post, and YouTube gave me a reason to make more. And the Dresden Dolls gave me a template, so they are partly to blame for Sweet Home High Wycombe. The lineup is just Amanda Palmer on piano and Brian Figlioni on drums, but the sound is big and hard-hitting. I have a couple of DVDs. Amanda Palmer plays with a ferocious virtuosity, looking like the reality of Liza Minnelli's Sally Bowles, suspenders and sweat-smeared makeup, and singing low like Dietrich, and howling if not like a banshee then at least like Susie. Brian Viglioni the drummer looks like a Victorian waif that's been press-ganged to slave in a music hall orchestra pit. but he plays hard, matching each of Amanda's changes of beat, tempo and time. They called their look Dark Cabaret because they did not want to be called goth, but the look they had at the time now would probably be called steampunk. It made me realise the possibilities of cosmetics, and I had to make up for lost time. Yes, Virginia is their second album and is more consistent than the first. Lyrically, it goes to dark and humorous areas, as Amanda muses amusingly on all flavours of sexual endeavours and their consequences. The album title comes from a line in the song called Mrs. O, written in response to an answer given by the New York Times to a young girl called Virginia, who asked the question, does Santa Claus exist? The song is an examination of the relationship between truth and belief and very much predicts our fake news presence. I particularly like the song Shores of California, which is an examination of how the different expectations of each of a pair of lovers will always end in the girl crying and the boy amusing himself on his own. The thing that elevates this album is the ending. Like the sun breaking through the dark clouds of cynicism, comes a song called Sing, which is a celebration of the healing power of song. Yes, Virginia, Dresden Dolls.
Big thank you to Twangling Jack Ford for this week's album review. Thank you to Tom Veck for coming on the show, for letting us share his music. Thank you to JV Hilliard for the Rylight Zone reading, and to everyone whose music I've shared. As always, you can find us on Facebook if you search for The Art Show on Wickham Sound. You should be able to find us. You can email me here at the studio on dane.cobain@wickhamsound.org.uk. That's dane.cobain@wickhamsound.org.uk. And I particularly want to hear from poets, musicians, performers, people with stories, people with MP3s. Whatever the case may be, get in touch. You can also listen again on the Wickham Sound website. We're repeated here on Wickham Sound on Monday nights, and we're on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. So I'm going to leave you with one last tune until next week. So this is Spirits of the Sea by former guest France Elul. I'll chat to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.